Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. I know when we cover the sport of football, we hear a lot about CTE, concussion protocol, things of that nature. There's another issue that is starting to receive a little more attention, and we're talking about that issue of pitch count and arm pain with the youngsters that pitch. And there's been a study that's been conducted by the Ohio State University, and one of the individuals that helped lead that study, Dr. James Onati, he joined us on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. First up, good morning, and tell us, what was the motivation of putting a study on this topic together?
So thanks for having me on, Jim. Let me just clarify, this study was led by doctoral student Michael McNally and also one of my colleagues, Ajit Chaudhary. So what we're really looking at is we don't think that arm injuries happen just, you know, from one catastrophic throw. We thought that it was, you know, overuse and accumulation kind of pieces. And so what we wanted to look at is, what's the normal or typical soreness and pain that kids go through in a normal year? So really, that's kind of the impetus of the study.
I know you, I think, documented 97 high school pitchers. And I think one of the findings was, and I'll read the quote, we found that the number of injuries peaked early, only about 4 weeks in, and then slowly declined until the end of the season. So that means the preparation leading up to the season must be pretty important.
Yeah, that's really kind of the big gist of this. And if you think about it, the same thing happens at the major league level with a lot of spring training and a lot of spring training washouts and those types of things where people aren't, unless they're a big household name, people aren't talking about them. But, yeah, we think the preparation in the off season is very important, and having a good ramping up program and preparing for that in season. If you think about it, most schools only have about 4 weeks from first day of tryouts to first game. And, that's pretty difficult to be able to get an arm ready for that if that's the only time you're preparing it.
The other issue I look at here, Dr. Onati, is, you know, our listening audience is primarily small schools. So we're talking about high school enrollments, 9 through 12, of 400 tops. So you're not talking about big rosters. And then you worry about, well, what type of pitching do we have? You know, that's an issue. And that, you know, pitch count rules have been implemented in Illinois within the IHSA. I think 105 is the cap for the regular season now, 115 for the postseason. Then, you know, you must sit for 4 days. Are you a guy that looks at the pitch count situation? Is it something that we have to have, or do you think there should be some discretion from the coaches? Because the only debate I hear is, well, why is it 105? Because this kid can maybe go 113, maybe the other guy can go only 98. But I mean, what about the pitch count issue, and are the pitch count rule, is that going to solve this issue, you think?
Well, let me preface, I'm a little biased. I was on the National Federation of High School Athletics Association that helped to push the pitch counts nationally and put in those things. But then I'm also on the Ohio High School Athletic Association's Sports Medicine Advisory Committee that helps to push the pitch counts. But let me hit that caveat. Pitch counts isn't the whole end-all be-all, and I think you're exactly right. You know, some people can go a little bit higher, some can go a little lower. The way I see the pitch count is really it's awareness for coaches and parents and players, and it's an awareness of, hey, you know what, you're getting pretty high up. I look at it as like a speed limit for signs. We know that, you know, individuals going 65 or 75 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone is pretty dangerous. So that would be like throwing 150, 160 pitches. The individuals, just because you stay below the speed limit doesn't mean you're safe. And just because you go one or two over doesn't mean that you're going to get in an accident. So I think there has to be some you know, common sense and some awareness. If you throw 115 pitches or in three innings, that's a lot. It's a lot of wear and tear. It's a lot of high effort. you throw 115 pitches over 9 innings, that's not a bad outing. That's a pretty good outing. So, you know, you got to have some common sense in these pieces, and I think pitch counts is just one part of instituting common sense for individuals who need that.
Well, and then I look at the other issue of, you know, we look at the top end of the pitch count rules where, you know, you're talking about 105 or 115, and you have to sit for 4 days. But then, the rest of the rule is staggered, where if you pitch 65 some odd pitches, you can maybe come back in a couple days. And, you know, I don't know if you continue to use a pitcher that way. Is that more harmful than the upper end? That's what I look at, that it's not the upper end that's the issue. It's that kid that maybe is throwing 50 pitches every couple of days that is getting loose, getting in the ball game, done playing, and then a couple days later, they throw them out there again.
I would agree. So some of the research that we also did that's outside of this, and some studies that have shown, is that essentially if you take the pitch counts, you can double the at-bat for the amount of throws that they actually threw easily, meaning if you throw 50 pitches in a game, you're throwing at least 100 times that day. So I agree with you. I think some of the major concern for me is the lower numbers and being used repetitively. Some people can recover, and some people have very good recovery, and they have very good strategies for recovery, or their body just naturally recovers well. It's just like marathon runners. There's some who recover really well. They can run a marathon every weekend. And ultra-marathon runners who can recover really well. There's something in their physiological system that allows them to recover. There's other people that don't. And 30 pitches may be a really long and hard outing, and you sit there going, well, I can use this guy the next day again. You got to have some awareness and some personalization. You got to talk to these kids, and there has to be a trust that the kid understands that, you know, I'm a little sore. I might not be able to go. And that's a fine line because, you know, we're trying to create some toughness, some grit in these individuals. But then we also have to create awareness. I liken it very similar to the concussion things that you alluded to before. Not every headache is a concussion, but we can't, you know, overlook all those pieces and keep people from, you know, getting hurt and those types of things. So.
Well, and I guess the other thing, too, for me, that, you have to look sometimes outside of issues like this and say, okay, yeah, okay, pitch count. Yeah, I know this kid can throw 105 pitches today. He begins the game, walk, hit, double, triple, walk, out, double, another walk. His day's done in the first inning. So what does pitch count even mean? I mean, from a coaching standpoint, to kind of manage this, that you have to realize that it's a numbers game too, but okay, kid's got to throw strikes first, and he's got to be a good pitcher, if you see what I mean. The pitch count rule really only matters for the good pitchers, doesn't it? I mean, if you see what I'm saying, if you have a bad outing, what does the pitch count number even really mean?
Yeah, again, we got to look at all these pieces. The pitch count pieces is very, very in the early infancy stage. It's not the end-all, be-all, and I do agree, you know, there is some concern of, you know, what happens when somebody throws 45 pitches in the first inning and needs to be pulled and those types of things. You know, some Major League Baseball put minor league baseball limits on their guys. They will say if you're over 30, you shut down. You're out of that game. And it doesn't matter. If you throw over 30 pitches in one inning, you're shut down. You're pulled automatically. And it could not be the pitcher's fault. It could be some errors and some, you know, bad plays behind him. So, it is. Pitch count, again, is just one piece of the puzzle. Another analogy that I always use is blood pressure, right? If you're sitting there and you're monitoring your blood pressure and it's a little bit high, you're not automatically going in for open-heart surgery. It's just one piece of the puzzle on those pieces, and I say pitch count is the same way.
All right. Talking with Dr. James Odati with Ohio State University, again, new study finds pitcher injuries increase as pitch count rises. And I think the other issue we can get into here is, you talk about one piece of the puzzle, I was thinking about the umpire, though, with the strike zone, is it liberal or conservative? And people can say, come on, blue man, there's a pitch down in play here. Call, you gotta have a wider strike zone. People will say, well, let's compare eras. And they'll say, well, the reason you see all these arm issues, Dr. O'Nady, is because when these kids were 9 and 10 playing in these youth tournaments, and they play baseball every weekend, and they've been doing that since they were 9 or 10, of course their arm's going to hurt. I'm assuming that the study didn't look at that, but when you kind of try to compare eras of when this youth baseball explosion took off, and I don't even know if there are uniform rules within the USSSA or whatever the sanctioning youth baseball organizations are in terms of how they monitor pitch counts, innings, how they do it from tournament to tournament, and it just takes one, you know, bad example for something to go wrong. But is that something down the road where you think data can be gathered and people can look at it and say, yeah, that's why you're seeing a lot of these kids have arm problems in their high school career, their college career, if they go professionally early in their professional career, that's why they're having these problems, is because of the overuse at an early age. Has any information or has this study documented any of that?
There's not exactly comparing one era to another era. There definitely is some work. Dr. Fleissig down in Alabama has done some things with Dr. Andrews, and they really have set a lot of the guidelines for the pitching guidelines. And USA Baseball has pitching guidelines that many associations adopt. But different tournaments and different organizations, number one, there is no sanctioning body of all youth travel baseball. I coach a 13U baseball team, and one weekend we play with the tournament rules of USA Baseball guidelines for pitching recommendations, the Pitch Smart guidelines. And then one weekend we'll play, they can throw 10 outs for the week, or 30 outs for the weekend or 10 innings. 10 innings, a kid, if you want to, he could throw 300 pitches. That's, yeah. that's child abuse if you're going to do that. So there has to be some, I think there has to be some guidelines. There has to be some things come together. I think USA Baseball and Major League Baseball are trying to get some handle on it. But we don't really know if you throw a lot as a 12 or 13 year old, that hurts you as a 25, 30-year-old. We don't know that information. We would assume there are some benefits of it, meaning you're getting, a skill expertise and those types of pieces, and then perhaps there's some detriment to it. Are we burning kids out? Are we, there's the whole how many bullets do you have left in your arm kind of statement, and we don't know which way it is and which way is positive on those things. And we could look at some cultural pieces, too. I just gave a talk, and we just talked about the Japanese pitching development. So it would be really nice to put a study together and look at the youth development in the wild, wild west of the USA baseball youth travel and the Japanese programs, which throw a lot, and be able to see, the pros and cons of each.
Yeah, that is interesting. Did you say 30 outs in a weekend? Is that what you said? Or 10 innings? Man, that's an interesting way to...
Yeah.
Try to determine, and then trying to piece that together as a coach. Yeah. I've been at some tournaments. I remember my kid played like where you can throw three innings, one game. If you throw more than that, you can't pitch the next game. But then you can come back the next game if you throw three or less. Those type of things. And it's so subjective because, like you said, you don't know how many pitches you're throwing in those innings. Yeah. And then depending on the time of day, you're also playing in. In terms of stress of the body, if you're playing at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and it's 89 degrees with relative humidity up there, that's a lot different than if you're pitching at 10 o'clock in the morning and there's a little cloud cover. So you got to factor all that in. So weather's a perfect segue. Now, I've been harping for years, purely from a baseball perspective, that baseball is a summer sport. But here in Illinois, we start practicing, I think, officially the first day. This year was the last Monday in February. The first actual games could begin was like mid-March, that first Monday in mid-March. And I know you're out in Columbus, and the weather pattern is pretty similar out there. Now, your study says that you'd like to see the season extended, so a longer season. Now, my position is I wish they would push the start of the season back. I don't want to eliminate or reduce, you know, the preseason workout stuff and, you know, some of the off-season stuff they do with open gyms. They should still be allowed to do that. But in terms of the actual season, trying to play the games into June instead of starting in March. Because I don't know, in terms of weather, what's your opinion of kids pitching in cold weather versus pitching in warm weather? I mean, does that factor in any of this?
Yeah, so we didn't look at that, the weather aspects, but there are some studies that show actually cold weather pitchers are a little bit more protective than warm weather pitchers, and that's probably an overuse piece because you just don't have the ability to play as many games in the cold weather, and so you don't play year-round as much, and you're able to train indoors and do those types of things. We just did in Ohio, we actually just got another week to our season added to the summer to be able to extend it out. Not any more games. So same amount of games, just extended over a longer period of time. You know, the difficulty of going into the summer, and I'm not sure where this kind of all started, but I know it happened still in the 80s when I was playing, is you run into, number one, school's off. And so where do we kind of go from the school standpoint? And this is a school function. And then number two, what happens in the travel system and the travel baseball. Now, when I was growing up, it was American Legion. So I played American Legion ball. And then I felt like I was on one of the first travel teams that went into it, because our travel team also played another association, County Mac. And so we actually played two schedules, and we thought we were playing a lot. But in reality, compared to the kids now, we're playing half the amount of games they play. So I do think the summertime is a great idea. You know, I think the state of Ohio is kind of pushed back the season. I don't think we're going to go into and eliminate the summer. Iowa obviously has a different viewpoint on it, and they play their high school season in the summer, and I don't know if people will take that as a positive or a negative. And, you know, I think there are things to consider, though.
All right, and again, talking with James Onati with Ohio State University, they did a pitch count study. So when you talk about pitching with pain, when you do this study, I mean, what is the answer or solution? Does the kid need to own up to it and say, you know, my arm hurts, and then does the coach need to take him out of the game, or, you know, do you fight through it? Is there a legitimate line or a legitimate answer with something like that?
Yeah, I think there has to be like in anything, there's got to be a relationship and an open line of communication. And then you have to give kids some guidelines, and you have to train them and teach them what things feel like. So things that I do at our high school and with my youth teams, and the things that I recommend, is you got to talk to them about these pieces. Again, it's no different than concussion and symptoms or heat illness or other injuries. You have to talk about it so you get an awareness of it. Now, we can't go too far and say, well, never throw with pain again or never throw with soreness, because as most people know who have thrown and played baseball, there's a time where your arm gets a little tired and a little dead, but we need to know how serious that is. And then we can modify some activities. So maybe we give the pitcher a little bit longer rest period, or maybe he doesn't throw as many pitches or innings, or maybe is in between starts. He's not doing as much bullpen or long toss. There's got to be a communication that needs to be formed. The thing that I give our kids is I give them a scale of 0 to 10, and I ask them to fill it out on a daily basis, or they just report it to me when I walk around. You know, 0 to 3, that's normal soreness. And so 0, 1, 2, 3, you're sore. You're a little bit tired, and you start understanding when your arm's a little tired and a little sore. And so you can, you know, handle that. 4 to 6, let's modify it. Catchers, let's not throw to second base and third base as much. Shortstops, let's put the ball in the bucket during ground ball drills and not throw across the diamond. Pitchers, let's not throw a bullpen today. And then 7 to 10 is let's go see somebody about this. It means your arm's really hurting really bad. You can't throw at all. And let's go see an athletic trainer. Hopefully your school has a certified athletic trainer. I'm a big proponent of that. I'm an athletic trainer. I think it's one of the biggest things that we can do for injury prevention out there. And then, you know, go see an orthopedic physician or primary care sports medicine physician who's familiar with the sport of baseball.
All right, and as we wrap up, I don't think I asked you specifically. What's the answer for, like, youth baseball? If you were in charge and there could be a uniform rule for youth baseball in terms of any type of pitching limitations, what should that be?
I like what USA Baseball guidelines have right now. I know they're not perfect, but they're a start. I think it's the easiest thing to go by. I think the PitchSmart recommendations are good. My biggest recommendation is have your entire team learn how to pitch. Do not rely on one or two great kids and then use them and burn them up when you're 11 and 12 and 13 years old. That's my biggest recommendation. And then stop worrying about what your win-loss record is and how many tournaments and trophies you've won. Development is the key for our kids, not necessarily trophies. That's my biggest thing.
And that PitchSmart, exactly, again, reiterate what the PitchSmart guidelines are.
Yeah, you can see the PitchSmart guidelines on USA Baseball, or you can see the PitchSmart guidelines on MLB Baseball. And they're just simple guidelines and recommendations. They're across different age groups. And, again, this is not perfect in the end-all, be-all, and it's not a perfect scenario, but it changes the days and times of those types of things. And then the bigger thing is it gives recommendations of what and when you should and how you should kind of handle some players. So, for instance, a catcher is throwing as many pitches as a pitcher is. He may not be throwing as hard, but he's got some wear and tear on his arm. So I would not have a catcher and a pitcher do the same thing that day, meaning don't put your catcher into pitch and don't put your pitcher into catch in the same game. And then just other recommendations. Take, 3 to 4 months off during the year. And I don't mean off, don't do anything. Train, develop, play another sport, become more athletic, those types of things. Those are the guidelines that are in the PitchSmart pieces.
All right. And then in terms of a clearinghouse for information on this study, is there a place online that people can go to and see some of the findings of this study?
Yeah, so our study is published in the it'll be an abstract, and then we're trying to put it out. We don't have a repository for those types of things. We're trying to develop a little bit of a database, some blogs for those types of things. And we don't have one nationally for a lot of these pieces. I guess right now the best thing is to look at some of the PitchSmart pieces out by USA Baseball and Major League Baseball is the best pieces, and they have some good resources. We also have in that, I was part of the long-term athlete development plan. It's got some glitches into it, but it's the first draft of that, and I think it's pretty good. And then, if people need to, sometimes people need to hear it from, former ball players. I think John Smoltz is a great advocate of the PitchSmart program, and listening to John Smoltz, who's a Hall of Famer, talk about that is a great way to learn too.
All right. And then finally, as we talk with Dr. James Onati from Ohio State, the Ohio State University, I should say, is what's next in terms of are you doing anything additionally on top of this as it relates to pitching? I know we talked about, we hit on some of the differences between, the eras of when kids have played in trying to, pinpoint, well, is it a problem because of youth baseball and the explosion and all those kids pitching at a young age, and can we tie some of that data to some other stuff? I mean, are you looking at doing some additional things with pitch count?
Yeah, so one of the things we're really trying to look at, and we're working with OHSAA, which is our Ohio High School Athletic Association, and I'm going to give a little shout-out to the new executive director, Jerry Snodgrass. He is the former baseball director for us. He's a great guy who really understands the impact that we have on these kids. We want to look at the effects of the pitch count. Are they reducing injuries? Is the injury needle changing anywhere? And what else can we do on those things? So we want to try to get more information on the effects of those things across the country, and being able to look at we have policy in place now at pitch counts. Is it changing the needle at all? And then I would really like to, take a look at and trying to formulate some more of the database at some of these national tournaments, just to get an idea of what people are doing in training and off-season training, and also looking at what is their normal pitch count loads. The beauty of it is everybody's tracking their stats for, you know, for their future college scholarships and Major League Baseball drafts, which is so rare. We could use that information possibly as an injury marker and being able to look at those types of things. So,
well, this is great, and we appreciate the time from Dr. James Onati with The Ohio State University, again, doing a study on pitcher injuries as it relates to pitch counts. And I know we've taken enough of his time, but a lot to digest and a good topic to have among, you know, not only high school baseball coaches, but definitely our youth baseball coaches in the area. Sir, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Jim, thank you. This was a lot of fun.
All right, we'll have more on WRMJ and WRMJ.com in a moment.